Welcome to the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Jackie Kinman and Lisa Whiston, self-proclaimed urban hippies, waste warriors, and passionate women. Tune in for practical information and inspiration on how to reduce your impact on the environment and become a more sustainable you.
Before we begin, Lisa and Jackie would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and the places on which we record our podcast. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Sustainable You. I am your host, Lisa Whiston, and today I really wanted to share with you a conversation that I had with my dad. For those of you that have followed me on social media or have followed Jackie and I, you may know that my dad is a long-serving member of our local fire brigade, the Panton Hills CFA. And this year in particular, he has volunteered to go out on quite a few of the strike teams that have been sent to the fire areas. And I was having a chat with him when he came home from his latest strike team the other day, and I found what he had to say really interesting. So I asked him if he would be willing to record our conversation, and he said yes. I know for many of you, you may have a personal connection to these fires. You may know somebody who's lives in one of the fire affected communities, or who have lost their house, or know somebody who has had an effect from the fire. But there will also be many of you that don't really understand the role that firemen and women play. And so I thought this would be kind of a nice thing to share with you. And hopefully you guys find it interesting too. So enjoy this interview with my dad, and Jackie and I will be back next episode of Sustainable You. Okay, so I'm here with my dad, Mike Jans. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Good. Maybe you can start by telling us your background and, your background and history with CFA.
Sure. I joined the Panton Hill Brigade in 1984, I think. The first year we moved out to Smith's Gully. And 35 years on, I'm still a member there and fairly active still. I've been president for nearly 20 years. And just been around to assist where we can. The CFA over those years has vastly changed. I mean, we joined the brigade purely to serve this community and do what we can to help out in the time of need. The CFA has certainly grown over those 35 years, and not only do we look after our community, we look after the whole state of Victoria and also interstate. So the CFA has evolved immensely over those 35 years that I've been associated with them. But the factor hasn't changed that we joined, and a lot of others have joined also for this same reason, is to serve the community, which we're very much a part of.
Mm. Do you think it's changed just because it's evolved naturally as communities have grown and changed? Or do you think that it's like big fires like Black Saturday or other major fires that have kind of shaped the way that CFA is run?
Certainly all of that. The CFA in those early days were an authority that supported volunteers within their own community. As I said, that's grown and changed, and now CFA play a far greater role in emergency management, and all the brigades within the CFA contribute to that. So it has evolved. It's more than just a local community emergency service. It's a statewide service.
Mm. So over the years, you have volunteered to go out on strike teams when the fire has been out of our community. What made you volunteer to go on strike teams, I guess, in the past and this year?
When you experience fire in your own local backyard, as we did at in King Lake and Strathewen in after the Black Saturday fires, or during the Black Saturday fires, you realise how vulnerable people are. They've got no idea how to protect themselves, and they just rely on people who know a little bit more about it, I guess. So, yeah, that's the reason I go, to help people, to assist people, to, I mean, in a situation of a bad wildfire, you've got no way of putting that fire out. Your role is to maintain or support your life, I guess, and that's our role, protect life and property in a major fire circumstance. Yeah, and I guess the sense to help out, that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So far in this last sort of fire season, you've been called out to fires in Sunbury, in Plenty Gorge, and then Gippsland in Cann River? Or?
Gippsland in Swan Ridge. We did a deployment to New South Wales in Grafton.
That's right.
And the last one was to Cann River. Yeah, they've. I mean, the last three, the deployments, the first one was to Grafton. And again, you just don't realise the size of this fire. I mean, 3 weeks on to the deployment, only a couple of days ago to Cann River, the enormity of the fires. I mean, they're saying it's 10.7 million hectares, and it really is difficult to fathom or appreciate the size of that until you physically drive through these areas. You drive for hour after hour through blackened bushland, pristine bushland, and it's only then that you get a sense of the size of this fire. And, you know, again, this fire won't go out until it rains, and substantial rain. And no matter what you put at it, you will not put this fire out until it does rain.
So even with all of the aircraft that they're calling for and the ADF to come and help and any man-made effort, still it won't be able to put this fire out.
No way. It's just too large. There are areas that you can't physically get into. There aren't enough aircraft to cover all that area. And I mean, the effort now is to protect communities. That's the sole purpose of our role in strike teams, protect life and property.
Crazy.
It certainly is.
Tell me what you were doing on these deployments. What were your roles?
Well, our role was a standby role in case fires impact communities, where we're based centrally and can be deployed, you know, within 50 k's of that area at short notice to support any area that's been impacted. Our last deployment at Cann River was completely different. We arrived, we were the second crew, relieving crew. The fire front had been through. There was a little bit of rain, milder conditions, and the fire activity had certainly quietened right down. And we took on a different role. It wasn't fire suppression, but supporting the local communities that have been impacted by that fire. And when I say supporting, just visiting them, asking them what they need, ferrying goods to them, basic goods, water, bread, diesel for their generators, and just giving them a hug, I guess. So, you know, without even putting any fire out, our role for the last 3 days was escorting people out of the fire area, bringing people back into the area through the dirt roads and different tracks as the highway was closed. And just supporting them. Whatever they needed, we got for them. We took the local nurse around. We escorted the ambulance into some of the devastated areas, and it was just another source of support. And that's something that struck me. We were lucky, and those communities were lucky, that we struck that mild period in the weather where we could put the time into that effort in that support role. But there are times when the fire just keeps on moving on and we move on with the fire. And what happens, I question what happens with these communities once we move on. It could be days, could be weeks, could be several weeks before the support for the recovery comes into these towns. And, you know, really struck out to me that, you know, what happens to these people when we leave? Will the financial support, the moral support, the ability to rebuild, how far is that away? And we saw what happened in Black Saturday. There was a lot of money raised for the victims, but, you know, it took months. It took up to a year in some instances that this donated money physically got to the people that required it. And that has to change. I mean, these people need support. They need those donations now, not in a week, not in a month, not in a year. And we just hope that the authorities who are managing all that will act swiftly, because that's what they need and that's what needs to happen now.
Yeah. You were telling me the other day that there were communities where they had no power, no food, they were running out of water and they hadn't heard from anyone.
Yeah. We, there's a place called Cape Terrace, a little community just out of Cairn River, who were impacted, you know, very, very harshly. And we rocked up there probably a couple of days after the fire front had got there, and tried to do what we could. We brought a few supplies, and people, they hadn't, no one had been there since the fire. And over the several days that we were in the area, we visited them on several occasions, trying to call into all the landholders there or the occupants there. And we met a woman who hadn't seen anyone for nearly a week. And all she wanted was to tell a story, to listen to someone or for someone to listen to her. And one thing that struck me, she mentioned that, you know, she lived as a child. She lived through the bombings of London in the Second World War, and the noise of this fire was far greater than that.
Wow. It would feel, I just can't imagine how isolating and scary that would feel, to be so disconnected to the rest of the world, but feel so alone. That would be horrible.
Oh, it's incredible. And these people, they lived through that, and they're not bitter. They've lost their house, but they're wanting to help someone else. Quite amazing. It really was.
And tell me that story about, was that the same community where the copper left?
Yeah, Cairn River, the Victoria Police authorities, I guess, ordered the local policeman from Cairn River to evacuate before the fire front came. And he was reluctant to do that, but obviously, I mean, he was compelled to listen to his orders, and he left the town. And there was only CFA units there, and it was totally lawless. So our members pretty much reorganised the whole town. We set up evacuation centres. We tried to protect the main parts of the town that we knew where the fire was coming from. So we pretty much took over the town for 3 days and ran the town for 3 days.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy how much we don't realise how vulnerable we are as society, how much we rely on the system and the sort of the way things have always worked. And then when that changes for an unprecedented reason, we just have this inability to self-organize.
Exactly. We take so much for granted in the world we live in, you know, until you're exposed and put in a position where you need to make a call, where everything else around you is falling apart. You just don't realise how vulnerable we are. And, you know, it's I'm not saying it's a good thing to experience all of that, but it's a certainly a learning experience. I think everybody, if they can appreciate a little bit of that, what others have gone through in such hardship, this place will be a far better time, a better place.
Mm.
There's also been a lot said about what's the cause of all of this fire. As we all know, climate change has got a lot to do with it. The reluctance to back burn and protect areas through cool burning. And there's a lot on social media and the media itself pointing blame at everyone. But this is the wrong time to even start that debate. I think we need to focus on, you know, killing this beast of a fire. And when I say beast, it really is a beast. It'll come out of the bush and bite you and then go away again. And that's what it's doing. So there will be time to review what's happened and how we're going to improve what we do and the factors that have contributed to this. But now is not the time. I think we need to flag it for further discussion.
So in your opinion then, what is the best thing for people to be doing now?
Consolidate, if you're in bush areas, have a workable, sustainable plan. Know what you're going to do well in advance. Support your local community and others around you. And that's, if you can do that, you're well covered.
Mm. I think that sense of community is something that kind of keeps coming back in a lot of the discussions that Jackie and I have with living sustainably. It's kind of like, get out of the rat race, slow down, think about what you're doing, think Absolutely. About what you're buying, connect with people in your community, share things, mm-hmm. like physically share things, buy locally, share information, and then help one another.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate to live in Smith's Gully. We're on the fringe of the CBD, and a lot of those community values are far stronger here than some of the inner city communities, I guess. Yeah, as Lisa said, look, just stick to the basics. Apply common sense in whatever you do, and live sustainably. We don't need a lot of the things that we've got. Think of others, share with others. We're here for the long term. And remember, we're only guardians of this land that we live in. Think about that,
Well, thanks for chatting with me, Dad. I know that people everywhere love the Fireys, love the fact that these people put their lives on the line and have given their lives in some cases. And we really do appreciate everything that you do to sure. help us.
Thank you.
Sustainable You can be found on Instagram at Sustainable You Pod, on Facebook at Sustainable You Podcast, or you can email us at sustainableyoupod@gmail.com. Episodes are created and produced by Lisa and Jackie.